Morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Jay Rosenthal, and I'm Senior Vice President and General Counsel at the National Music Publishers Association. Prior to taking the position at NMPA, I represented artists, songwriters, producers, managers, and indie labels for almost 25 years as a transactional attorney, and I also engage in public policy matters representing the Recording Artist Coalition. So I come at this from an experience right down on the field. NMPA was founded in 1917. It's the largest U.S. music publishing trade association with over 2,600 publisher members. We hope by better understanding the perspective of songwriters and music publishers, you will develop meaningful guidelines that will help you develop a research agenda that will promote innovation in both the consumer technology and the creative communities. As a general matter, we support a copyright ecosystem that nurtures and encourages artists to create new works and at the same time supports opportunities for technological innovation and competition. However, we do not believe, as some promote, the copyright law is a system demanding equal balance between creators' rights on the one hand and technology and consumer interests on the other. The interests of the consumer technology communities must, of course, be taken into consideration and should be given proper due. But in our view of paramount focus, copyright law should prioritize creators' property interests and economic rights. Notwithstanding our view of copyright and contrary to the assertions of copyright critics, the equilibrium between consumer technology interests and creators in the copyright system has shifted dramatically against copyright creators. More music is being created and heard today than ever before, lawfully and unlawfully. Yet because of digital technology, today's rights holders have far less control over their works, and as a result, they have been subjected to the greatest proliferation of copyright infringement the world has ever seen. At times, it actually seems like works fall into the public domain, not when the copyright term is over, but rather when the work is published. The over 1 million members of the songwriting community have been and will continue to be severely impacted by these developments. While a staggering volume of copyrighted music is being distributed, copied, and streamed, the creators of that music, America's songwriters, receive very little compensation, as the prior speaker has mentioned. Unlike performing artists, many songwriters do not have other sources of income. Songwriters do not tour. They do not sell merchandise. They do not do endorsement deals. Generally, no movies, no television. They rely almost solely on songwriter income. Furthermore, there are half as many albums released on major labels as there were 10 years ago. That means that there are half as many opportunities for placement of songs, and the payment for those songs has dropped dramatically. And it's also evident that public performance income and the internet cannot be counted on as a reliable source of songwriting income the way it has in the past. Since the beginning of this age of rampant online theft, we've witnessed the creeping, involuntary amateurization of the creators of musical works. And this especially applies to songwriters. This is the greatest danger to our culture, and it is certainly not what the founding fathers intended when they spoke of progress. The copyright law was not created to promote songwriting as a hobby by involuntarily pushing professional songwriters into an amateur status simply because they are not making enough money as full-time songwriters. Fewer songs will be professionally written and recorded, and for those written and recorded, the quality will undoubtedly suffer. I believe this is an area that you should focus on in your research. The lesson learned from all of this is that it is impossible to compete with free, and those creating guidelines to promote technological innovation must reject business models based on free. We hope there's a recognition that the culture of the consumer technology community must change, as should the business models adopted by the copyright community. We also hope the recommendations of your committee will provide the consumer tech community with a new copyright framework, one that will incentivize technologists to develop technologies and systems incorporating the means to pay the creators of musical works from its inception, rather than placing a premium on systems and services ignoring that responsibility. Too often, new media companies build their businesses on the backs of creators by using their music as a draw to their new service, and then put licensing and compensation of creators at the bottom of their priority list. With all that said, we believe it's in the best interest of both the creative and consumer tech communities to find common ground and to develop ideas, hopefully through your research, that will promote innovation in both communities. As such, I'd like to just address a few specific issues that we think are particularly problematic. First of all, our copyright system should not prohibit or inhibit the right or the ability of copyright owners or ISPs to engage in reasonable copyright enforcement measures, whether as a legislative or litigation matter. As an example, ISPs should and must become more involved in the solution to piracy, and nothing in our laws should prohibit an ISP from implementing a proactive approach to copyright enforcement. As a general proposition, fair use should not be expanded beyond its present parameters. Specifically, unauthorized peer-to-peer activity should not be a form of fair use. If that were the case, the damage to songwriters would be unprecedented and debilitating. Without strong copyright laws supporting claims for direct and secondary liability, the amateurization of the songwriter will accelerate. We must also strive to promote a copyright system whereby technologists have incentives to create technologies incorporating a means to pay the copyright holder from the inception of the technology. Songwriters and publishers do not want to sue creators of technology. They want to license and engage in commerce, and they want the companies to do what is right and lawful while they are creating their technology, not after. Recent court cases have not been as sympathetic to the copyright owner as the technology innovator and consumer. For example, courts have made it exceedingly hard to notify services of infringing activity under the DMCA takedown notice provision. These cases have effectively made it almost impossible for songwriters or any independent label or musician to seek takedown of their works. The service may have the best takedown notice program ever, but the incredible burden placed on smaller and independent copyright owners like songwriters to police the internet have made the entire process illusory. As a result, services now have an incentive to use copyrighted works without authority because they are not afraid of enforcement measures. What the copyright owner doesn't know won't hurt them. This is also, I believe, an issue that should be a focus of your research. While technological mandates should be limited as a matter of copyright policy and business realities, they should not be prohibited, especially if the goal is to aid in copyright enforcement or help develop and maintain a sensible copyright system that will ensure economic gain to songwriters and publishers, thus providing incentive to the songwriter to continue to create work. For example, watermarking and fingerprinting technologies designed to help determine the proper party to pay should certainly not be prohibited or discouraged. One final point about secondary creators of music. There has been an inordinate amount of concern about the impact the copyright regime has on the creation of new works incorporating pre-existing works, for example, mashups and the use of digital samples. Some believe the copyright law somehow inhibits the creative process for creating these and other types of works. It has been my experience that licensing requirements have not inhibited the innovative process to any significant degree. If a creator wants to use pre-existing works, there are licensing services available to legally and easily arrange for the use. So I do not believe a change in the copyright law or looking even at research on this topic is necessary for these types of works. I hope these points I've touched upon will help you better understand the concerns of our community and will help you develop your research agenda. Look forward to answering any questions.
Thank you very much.
So one of the more interesting new models, solutions, is the content ID system being used by the YouTube service. And that provides opportunities for companies or members of your organization to participate actively in doing a much lower transaction cost type of licensing arrangement. And it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on, where you see that in, kind of a more promising future.
I think that has to be part of the future. The idea of content identification is not just essential for copyright owners to know where their works are, but how to pay people. And I think that what YouTube is doing and others in this field is, I think, very positive. We have been involved in litigation with YouTube, our organization. We hope that everything will be, settled in an amicable way. But we also recognize that they have licensed and they have entered into contracts with companies, entertainment companies, and we're in favor of that. and we're in favor of the technology. We hope there's more and better. I think one of the problems for songwriters is that it's not just the track. There could be an album out there, and there could be 10 publishers. There could be 20 songwriters. You know, that data is also very important, and our industry must look at that, working with technologists to develop a system that will easily identify all of the songwriters and publishers so we know who to license and we know who to pay.
And should we look to the government to do that, or is that something that the private sector is gearing up to resolve?
I think the private sector is gearing up to resolve it, but obviously sometimes government must, push a little bit and needle when they have to. But I obviously this is a very big, company-oriented process. I don't know whether the government, or if you're referring to the Copyright Office, has the capability or the inclination to do this kind of massive database creation and process creating and systems creating. So I think it's a joint venture to a certain extent, but it's got to be in the private sector.
Mr. Sherman, this is Chris Sprigler from the University of Virginia. So thank you for your comments. I'm intrigued by something you said and just trying to get a handle on whether you have a view that might help us understand it. So on the one hand, you described an environment in which songwriters are having a tougher and tougher time maintaining their incomes. On the other, you say that, well, there's probably more music now being produced and heard than ever before. Why the second when we have the first? Do you have a view as to what's going on out there that keeps people creating here in the face of these difficulties that you describe?
Yeah, I have 2 points to that, and one is actually a follow-up to something that was said over here about quality. On the first point about there's more music, let's remember we're hearing more music. We really don't know how much music was actually created before and not heard. The means that we have now at our, available on the internet allow us and allow users to place music up there as much as possible. So I think, yes, there could very well be more music, but that goes to my point about amateurization and the issue of quality. I can tell you, and this is coming from anecdotal evidence, but my own experience, artists who have to get other jobs, songwriters who have to get other jobs so that they can create almost as a side business, do not create better works than professionals. It just doesn't happen. It is it is clear that there is kind of a romantic myth out there about the starving artist, and you get your best art from someone not getting paid. I can tell you, I've represented a lot of artists in my day and songwriters, and I don't think any of them would really say, I'd rather not get paid than get paid. I think better work comes from it, and I know of artists who have really created their careers because they have been able to focus 100% on their work, just like anyone could. You must be able to have time to do the skill, the technique, all of that, the learning. It doesn't happen if you have another job.
Can I just jump in on this since I asked the quality question? Could you point to anything we could look at, Pitchfork ratings, Metacritic, something to look at the new output since 1999 to document that there's been a decline in the quantity of high-quality output?
Yeah, when you mentioned that, I was kind of just snickering a little bit about reviews. I'm not sure that's where we go for data at all. And this is one of those hard areas. I mean, I agree with you from a research standpoint. It's tough to quantify quality. It really is. And I think that, again, one must maybe make a little leap here and there. This might be one of them. If a songwriters are not getting paid, one can make a very, clean jump to the conclusion that the work is not what it could be. You can't revise. You can't get out there and test. You just sing, throw it up on YouTube, and hope for the best. I think that there's it's fairly, a good conclusion to make that you're not seeing the quality. But I also think that some thought should be put into it. How do we, look at the quality issue? I can tell you this, and maybe when the RIAA speaks, they can even address this. When you have a decline in money coming into the business, especially for the record labels that have always brought money in at the top and spread it out at the bottom by being able to sign many different kinds of artists, meaning experimentation continues. All of that is going away. The labels don't have that opportunity and luxury, essentially, to bring in artists that they might develop and that they feel might have the great quality involved. It's, okay, is it Justin Bieber? Yeah, well, let's sign him. Is that quality? I'm not going to make a comment.
Yeah, Mr. Sherman, the issue I have, though, is if we're making a quality argument, I'd be really grateful to the extent you can direct us as our charge goes on to anything you think we should look at. It would be really helpful because this is, you know, quality is, it's so difficult to judge. I agree. And we if this is an argument that people want to make, I'd love to just be able to either assess it or with some real evidence. I'm at this point, I don't know what to think about it.
We're ready to work with you on that.
Could I just one question as an extension of that line of questioning, which is setting aside the issue of quality, which I think is a very difficult thing to judge. You made another statement, which is sort of precedes the judgment of quality, which was that there's a creeping amateurization.
Yeah, I know.
So
yeah, it's tough to say.
Is there research that could be done in that area that would allow us to evaluate the number of professional songwriters or recording artists versus the number that are amateurs? And
yes.
How would we go about evaluating that?
I think the prior speaker talked about the songwriter associations. And there are. There's one in Nashville Songwriters International. There's the Guild, Songwriters Guild. They have data that in terms of how many, you know, songwriters out there are making over a certain amount of money. One has to make the leap that you go below a certain amount of income, you're not a full-time professional anymore. You are a part-time professional or an amateur. So is there data out there? They have some, but we think that there has to be more. And we think that it's a very, let's not say easy argument to make, but we think that it's a clean argument to make, that once you make less money, you're not going to be a professional anymore because you have to go out and work. I have represented clients who have lost their label deals, and they have had to go out and go back and work in bars and McDonald's and all of that. I mean, you know, it's clear to me that it happens. Can we come up with strong data? I think that's our job as well, and I think we're working on it. We would love to work with you on that as we go along, but the songwriter groups are really, they're focusing as much on that issue as anyone.
One potential topic of research is whether it's too hard these days to keep track of copyright ownership. And you've said a couple of things that are relevant to that question. One is that you suggested it's even hard for people in the industry to keep track on any given album of all of the various publishers and artists involved. But you've also said that it's not that hard for people who want to do mashups, for example, to figure out who to ask permission from and to get that permission that they need. So I suspect that maybe I'm comparing apples and oranges, but could you explain why the information is hard even for industry insiders to get, but it's easy for would-be remixers to get the permissions that they need?
Well, I think you might have misunderstood me. Mashups, generally, those involved in them, they don't get permission. So it's real easy.
Right, but you have suggested that it would be easy for them to get permission,
oh,
and the copyright is no obstacle to
yes.
that kind of creativity.
Yes. Let me use the example of digital samples, which as a practicing attorney, I lived through that era and worked with artists in the urban community who use digital samples all the time. When they started out using digital samples, many of them thought, oh, this is great. We can just use it and put it on there and not worry about it. And they used to put dozens of digital samples on every single song and every single album. Well, then other copyright owners started to come out and sue them. And it backed into a business model that basically had them using some digital samples, and there were businesses that evolved, where if you wanted to use a digital sample, you go out, you contact a clearance company, they go out, contact the copyright owners, because they are on top of this more than anybody else, generally in terms of who to contact and how to get in touch. You get a quote, you license. I think that model is the model that should be applied to the mashup world. Now, obviously, mashups might use a lot more, But nevertheless, there's got to be this equilibrium at some point or another where those doing mashups have to understand that not only should they get the rights, and there are means to do that by companies that are already in existence, you don't want to, I know this is a subjective term, insult many artists by using their works in a way that they feel are disparaging. So there's nothing wrong with going out and asking the first artist if they mind having their works used in the second derivative work that's being created from their pre-existing work. So I think the model's there, and I think it's just a matter of those doing mashups understanding it, knowing who to contact, and doing the business.
I want to catch you. Ruth had a question.
Yes.
I just had a follow-up question to Molly's. When you talk about mashups, are you drawing a distinction between mashups that are done, say, on YouTube, for example, just for either personal or some sort of select community enjoyment, or do you think all mashups under all circumstances should be subject to a business model like the one you are describing?
I think there's mashups, that there's a community out there who do mashups for the purpose of, let's say, releasing them somewhat in a commercial way. A lot of them just, you know, kind of throw them up there, and that's kind of their promotion. But they're thinking more in terms of long term. YouTube is a little different, and I think that a business model is developing where creators get paid from that kind of use of music. I'm not sure that's a mashup as much as it is almost almost like a digital sample use. You know, many people on YouTube, they would take a song, they would just connect it to their little birthday party, and they throw it up. And the question is, how does a creator get paid? That's an issue, I think, with the YouTubes of the world and figuring out what kind of income can flow through those companies to pay the creators. The other issue of mashups is much more of a professional issue. There's an artist very famous in this world called Girl Talk. They do, you know, you listen to Girl Talk, you're hearing loads of pre-existing material all over the place. That's what he does. And, you know, that to me is what I was talking about, that they need. The Girl Talks of the world need to tap into the already existing licensing models and also the companies that are out there to help them, as opposed to standing on a soapbox and saying, this is a new, you know, art form. We're taking music from somebody else without asking them and putting it together, and isn't this fun? That's got to change in our estimation.
Thank you very much.